from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our next hour, for half a century, the Esalen Institute in Big Sur has been at the forefront of radical ideas, many of which have now become mainstream, movements like yoga, holistic medicine, and organic food. And the Institute has also hosted scores of influential thinkers over the past 50 years, from Ansel Adams and Henry Miller to Aldous Huxley and Susan Sontag. We'll look back at the history of Esalen and to its future. Forum is up next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of the Forum program. Esalen Institute in Big Sur has been a retreat for over a million people as it celebrates 50 years as a place for seekers of human potential, transformation, healing, therapeutic, somatic, and spiritual practice. Located on land that once belonged to the Esalen Indians, Esalen was established as a retreat a half century ago by two then Stanford graduates, Michael Murphy and Dick Price, for what Rupert Sheldrake once described as experience which the universities, with their emphasis on publishing and citations, could not offer. Esalen bloomed with the zeitgeist of the free speech movement and the anti-war movement in the Summer of Love. And it drew a host of famous and celebrated visitors and guests to its thousands of workshops, daily organic meals grown largely directly from the campus gardens, and its massages and nude bathing. Esalen became a quasi-utopian place where change, both personal and social, have been tied to visions of unifying mind and body, religion with science, and East with West. And recently, Esalen has been going through conflicts over management restructuring and layoffs, and outcries have been raised about how it is allegedly trying to move too much toward becoming corporate and turning into what has been characterized as a boutique spa. But in this Forum Hour, we want to turn our attention to Esalen Institute as it celebrates its golden anniversary and looks toward a sustainable future. Joining us in studio is Gordon Wheeler, president of Esalen Institute. Welcome, Gordon Wheeler.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, and good morning also to Tricia McEntee, who is now CEO of Esalen Institute. Welcome.
Good morning.
And we're expecting Mike Murphy as soon as he can get here, co-founder and chairman emeritus of the board of Esalen Institute. And Gordon, let me begin with you. I just want to highlight something. I happen to have dinner over the weekend with a number of people, including Ken Dykewald, who has been a major supporter of Esalen for, well, since he was a hippie many, many years ago, now one of our leading gerontologists. And he was explaining to a mutual friend, Sandy Kleiman, what Esalen is, and he just said, I've been all over the world, and it's the most magical, beautiful place I've ever been, bar none. It's quite a statement to make, even for Ken Dykewald. But that's pretty much the way you guys feel, isn't it?
Well, Ken certainly has been everywhere, from Davos to the Renaissance weekend, and he comes back and back to Esalen. We really appreciate him. We feel that it must be true because people tell us not only our experience, but people tell us that all over the world, that they treasure their memory of Esalen, that it changed their life. I occasionally have somebody tell me, you know, I've been to Esalen once. It changed my life. Well, actually, I was only there a couple of hours, but it changed my life.
You also have people saying it changed all my lives, right?
Yeah, that too.
There's that as well. In fact, let me talk to you about just the sense of how much things, again, like holistic medicine, things I mentioned, permaculture, mind-body unity, have become so much a part of, well, the marketplace and the world out there that we don't realize how Esalen was really pioneering in so many of those things.
Yeah, well, our fingerprints are on all those things that we take for granted as the kind of toolbox of the complex culture of today. From, you know, if you think about personal growth education, lifelong personal growth that's distinct from psychotherapy and not clinical, that's an assumption that you're going to keep growing and learning all your life. That was not true in 62. That was not the cultural assumption. That was an exception.
Well, you come from a background actually as a Gestalt psychologist, but you have all of these different modalities of psychology and of healing and so forth that really were kind of under the Esalen umbrella, like you say, fingerprints all over.
Yeah, and especially we've done a lot with fostering and training people in clinical work, but our signature is really the non-clinical, the personal growth for everybody lifelong.
And social growth as well. In fact, there's a role of Esalen's, Tricia, that a lot of people may not be aware of. Tricia McEntee with us, the CEO of Esalen now. And that is citizen diplomacy. I mean, it played a central role in kind of thawing out the Cold War. Yeltsin was there and when he was mayor of Moscow. But it continues. Representatives of Abrahamic religions from places like Pakistan and Afghanistan go to Esalen now. And there was an attempt to bring people face-to-face, encountering in terms of racial differences. That's all been instrumental.
Absolutely. One of the things that has been most touching and moving for me is a group of women that we host called their Beyond Words is the name of their organization. And it's a group of Palestinian and Israeli women that, you know, really believe in the women will bring the peace and what is needed to the Middle East. And they have come to Esalen, I think it's, 5 years now?
Yeah.
It will be the fifth year this year. And they are...
let's give kudos to Nancy Lenny, who I see has come with you for that whole program.
Yes, yes. She started that, and it's been incredibly transformational for those women. And those kinds of things, we want to... Our future is hosting more and more of those kinds of things.
And Esalen's also gone to Cambodia to work with people who have AIDS. I mean, this is a global kind of phenomenon, and people come to Esalen from all over the world. I don't want to sound like I'm hyping Esalen here. We'll get into some of the problems that have occurred and come up recently. But Michael Murphy just sat down, and I wanted to, first of all, welcome Mike Murphy, who is co-founder and chairman emeritus of the board of Esalen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to have you, and congratulations to all of you, by the way, on this milestone, this golden anniversary. I thought maybe we talk, now that we've got you seated here, talk a little bit about Esalen's history, because it began kind of in chaos with Dobermans and with guns and people from Muscle Beach. I mean, quite a picture that can be painted here. But let's get back to what you and Dick Price even envisioned when you first went to the land that belonged to your family, which is where Esalen now is based.
Well, We didn't know we were going to have the adventures we had all the way through, but we wanted a place to explore human possibilities. We had both been introduced to a great professor at Stanford. We were classmates, Friedrich Spiegelberg, who taught comparative religions, and in the process... got swept into the thinking of those days. I mean, you have to go back to what it was like there in the 50s and 60s with people like Aldous Huxley and Abraham Maslow and Paul Tillich talking about a new vista of human possibilities.
But for you...
Always a personal opening, and then we wanted to have a place where we could explore the ideas we'd been gotten interested in there originally at Stanford. A forum. And so we started inviting the people who had inspired us, Aldous Huxley, Abraham Maslow, Paul Tillich, and so forth. We didn't have a blueprint, but we had a dream. In many ways, that dream has been fulfilled. In other ways, it's opened up unexpected adventures and possibilities.
Well, we'll talk about the future as well. But I wanted to you mentioned Maslow and you mentioned Spiegelberg and all these important names. Sri Aurobindo needs to be mentioned here, too. You went off to India. And, in fact, I think your grandmother was afraid you were going to bring Hindus onto the land and have them take over at one point.
Right. I came back from India, the ashram of Sri Aurobindo. He was a combination of... independence leader. He was the first Indian to call for complete freedom from Great Britain before Gandhi and had been imprisoned. He'd been educated in England. I think he knew 12 languages. In any case, he had, like many of those Indian leaders, a spiritual revelation, mystical experiences, authentic mystic. And he combined a worldview that was based in you could call it a kind of neo-Hegelian worldview, that the whole cosmos is a slumbering spirit, that the world is a great adventure of the divine manifestation. This was his philosophy that he came to in his 20s and 30s, confirmed by these mystical experiences, but also an Indian independence leader and jailed and so forth. And his vision of personal and social transformation was what inspired me. So I went over to India and spent a year and a half at the Aurobindo Ashram, 56, 57, came back with a dream to start a center to explore this vision of things.
And there you were with Hunter Thompson. And
well, anyway, no, but that my grandmother didn't like the idea of me taking over the property and told my father, who was kind of the executor of all her holdings and estate, that, well, Michael will give it to the Hindus, so we can't give it to him. But 2 years later, we Dick Price and I went down there to continue our studies and meditations. We were creatively unemployed at this point, 30 years old, and found this humongous scene. My grandmother's judgment wasn't much better than mine. I mean, she'd hired Hunter Thompson as the caretaker, and Joan Baez was living there, and Henry Miller would be taking the baths, and it was a big bohemian scene, and such chaos resulted when a group of unruly people in the baths tried to kill Hunter Thompson one night, and I mean really tried to toss him over.
He was covered with blood, really, wasn't he?
Well, he was covered with blood, and at this point, my grandmother decided, well, better to give it to the Hindus and have everybody, all the Murphys, go to jail. So we took the property over, and that was 61, 62.
Born in Hunter Thompson's blood.
Yeah.
Michael Murphy
was
us.
Those are the days.
By the way, also the author of Golf in the Kingdom. So let me go back to you, Tricia McEntee, and talk about what now is a strategic plan. You want to vitalize Esalen and make it more a conscious learning organization, even than perhaps it's been for this half century. Advancing it and seeing that it's sustainable. So how do we get into specifics here?
That's exactly, I mean, that is one of our main initiatives going forward, is really bringing Esalen into the 21st century, being a conscious business. I mean, we host a Center for Theory and Research conference on conscious business and have some of the top CEOs that that run these conscious businesses. And our goal is really to become, not just to host that conference, but to become one of those businesses that are counted among the very best. And that means, you know, it means a lot of work. And we need, you know, to increase our sustainability efforts. We have a really aging campus. Our facilities are aging. We need to build and renew the facilities really green.
Uber green.
Uber green educational facilities. We've certainly come a long way as far as setting a good, strong foundation for just sustaining the organization into the future. We needed to build a lot of the basic building blocks of running an organization, whether it's financial reporting or human resource practices. We've built our information systems technology and just launched a big website. So the last, 4, 5, 6 years, we've just been really, really busy working hard on the ground to build this solid foundation. And, you know, there's still work to be done.
Let me compliment you on that website. By the way, if people want to see how beautiful Esalen is, just go to esalen.org. Though the adjectives you often hear, Gordon Wheeler, besides magical and beautiful, are expensive.
Well, you got to remember, Esalen is a residential village. Most of the staff live there. It's a remote location, which is part of our value. You go there and you have an opportunity to retreat and think. But at the same time, it means that everybody that works there, we have to support them. It is an expensive model. And at the same time, as Tricia is leading us into business sustainability and better practices, better human practices, we still are retaining our seeker-serving seekers model. We don't, if we were just going to be corporate about the bottom line, we would bus in the staff and have it be a high-end spa. But that's not what we do.
But that's been the nature of a lot of the criticism. We might as well address this now since you brought it up. I mean, there were layoffs and there's been a lot of talk about management restructuring, but being too hierarchical, you know, sort of moving away from the dream, being corporate, turning Esalen. And Esalen's had its financial troubles. I mean, there was El Nino and there was a fire and so forth. But that in order to make more money, you're going more the corporate route or the boutique spa. And you say what to that?
Well, come and take a look, because we've got, at any given moment, we have as many as about 80 interns on the property, ranging from 1 month to year-long and a little more. That's not the way a corporation would staff its business, and we support every one of those people. That's one example. That's what I mean by seekers serving seekers. You come to Esalen, you step into a living community, not a business. And we got to be business-like or we'll go under. But you step into a community where everybody eats together. There's no class discrimination. Nobody knows if you're in the high-end room or in the sleeping bag that the high-end room actually supports, because we have below-cost sleeping baggers. They don't know if you're there on scholarship. We all meet at the baths. We converse in the dining room. And then we meet in the courses.
Why all this criticism, though? I mean, if people lost their jobs. 9 people were laid off, I believe. But the criticism has been – I've been reading, you know, the blogs. It's been quite profound that, like, the dream of Esalen has been given up. There's somebody on the board now who is a hotel guy. And therefore, you know, it seems to suggest to some of these people who are posting that it is going to go the way that you're saying it's not going to go.
Well, Chip Connolly, one of our new board members, who is the author of a book on Abraham Maslow, so, I mean, he's also not your typical corporate guy. That's about this whole vision of learning how to be a sustainable business that can cope in the demanding, complex world of today and continue to offer 600 programs a year and support a small pioneering program. You know, we could go straight down the middle and have only the most popular teachers that already have a following. We do that, but we also are always sponsoring money-losing and pro bono and small workshops. We're committed to that. It's all about the mission of personal and social change.
Well, the one thing, Tricia, you hear about the workshops over and over again, Tricia McEntee is CEO of Esalen, so there are these great workshops and these inspiring workshops and some extraordinary people, and then you hear sometimes, boy, there's some really loopy stuff. Now, you have to wonder, is that more in the experimental vein, or are you trying to kind of be inclusive and embrace both the intellectual and the far out loopy?
Well, I think it's one of actually the advantages, the real benefits of Esalen is that we're small by nature. I just took a trip out to the East Coast, and some of the other centers like Omega, they have courses and classes of like 100, 200, 300 or more people. And so we're small. Our average workshop size is 15 people. So that's our mission. It allows us to take some risks and really experiment with some things and some emerging new leaders that other centers aren't able to do. So we're actually very proud of that. When we was having a focus group discussion with a bunch of our leaders, and many of them said, we try out our new material here at Esalen. We can't do it anywhere else, but we know we can do it here, and we get a really good feedback of, you know, whether we are loopy or not. So, and I think it's a lot of the reason why our, you know, we call them seminarians, our guests come, is because they like to be part of that cutting edge exploration.
Well, you know, Michael, I mean, that's been...
Let's bring Michael Murphy in, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that was central to our idea when we started.
Experimenting,
because we could do things that Stanford and Harvard are just not going to do. And the two, let's call it, to simplify this, the two sides of Esalen, the public programs, what, 15,000 people a year that come through, we're always trying to bring in new and innovative approaches, and we can do that. On the other side, invitational conferences and research programs and so forth, that's been going on all the while, too. And now that is not open to the public. But, for example, our, you know, Russian-American initiatives and all sorts of initiatives.
Well, can I say something? I mean, here, just full disclosure, I was invited to Esalen for a creativity conference a number of years ago with Walter Murch and Matt Groening, who is the founder of The Simpsons on TV, and Amy Tan. It was a wonderful experience, and, you know, got to spend a whole weekend just exploring creativity. It was
Well, Michael, I mean, see, both tracks have been going on from day one, and they're both innovating, and that's our privilege, that we have the freedom from a lot of mainstream academic or religious constraints. We can do things. So, you know, Tricia, with our public programs, we always trying to innovate, and if a few people aren't calling us loopy, we're not doing what we set out to do. I mean, that's the way it goes.
What are you most proud of when you look back over 50 years? I mean, you're the visionary. You and Dick Price are the visionaries that really are responsible for whatever's come out of Esalen, and a great deal has come out of it. And what do you look back at with the most pride?
Well, Michael, I thank you for all that. I'm proud, first of all, at the scale of the number of people we've touched in all sorts of ways. I mean, 50 years, perseverance furthers. You know, for me to go down there after all these years and have somebody, as they do all the time, come up to me and say, this place has saved my life. You know, this, I mean, it's so deep, so heartfelt. So, of course, I'm proud of that. Well, in terms of our larger projects, I'm very, very proud of our whole Soviet American, now Russian initiative. My wife, Dulcie Murphy, has been a large part of the main glue of holding this together for 32 years, but those sorts of things, and the various initiatives along the way in education, something called Confluent Education, UC Santa Barbara, the it was triggered at Esalen, Ford Foundation grants, and that has spread now to at least 25 countries. UC Santa Barbara, 500 graduate degrees in Confluent Education. What is it? It's bringing together, the affective domain, so-called, the education or the cultivation of emotional intelligence and kinesthetic intelligence with cognitive intelligence. It's in one way, it's been in the mainstream of American educational reform, going back to John Dewey and Teachers College at Columbia. But with the new initiatives that came through Esalen, largely in somatics and all the meditation-like practices, the experimental therapies. We don't call it therapy, but let's say what Gestalt learning led to. All of that, that was a big stream into mainstream education. Esalen was a part of that. And then in so-called, humanistic medicine, now holistic medicine and so forth, the Esalen staff wrote the first legislation for the U.S. Congress that ever mentioned holistic health or humanistic medicine in 1968. Wayne Jonas, who became head of the NIH's first the branch alternative and complementary medicine, was largely informed and inspired at Esalen. So in a number of fields, we've had this impact, I mean, over the 50 years. So I'm proud of all those things.
Well, we're coming up on a break, and we're also inviting you, our listeners, to let us know some of your memories or thoughts about Esalen, and any questions you have are certainly welcome. And let me tell you how you can join this conversation in any way you please. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. So feel free to join us by phone. Again, that's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page, or you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Again, we're talking with Michael Murphy, the co-founder and chairman emeritus of the board of Esalen Institute, Gordon Wheeler, president, and Tricia McEntee, who is the CEO. When we return, we'll hear from you. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about Esalen Institute, which has, come upon its 50th anniversary. Hard to believe. In fact, I've often said, knowing Mike Murphy for a long time, that he may be one of the best advertisements for Esalen, because he looks so great as a guy who's crossed the threshold of 8 decades. For a half century, Esalen in Big Sur has been at the forefront of radical ideas, many of which have now become mainstream, as we've said. You think of yoga and holistic medicine and organic food. Those were all really a part of Esalen. And some of the people who have been associated with Esalen through the years and people who have gone there could be on any list of, well, any Hall of Fame you want to create. I was just looking back and go back to names that have been mentioned by Mike Murphy, like Aldous Huxley and Henry Miller, Timothy Leary. But then you've got all these people in the entertainment world, Joni Mitchell and Judy Collins and Arlo Guthrie and I've said Yeltsin, Rudy Schweiker. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Alan Watts, John Cleese. And we're getting a lot of responses, actually hearing memories from many people who have been touched one way or another by Eslin. Mike Murphy, the co-founder and chair emeritus of the board, is here with us in studio. So is Gordon Wheeler, who is president, and Tricia McEntee, who is Eslin's CEO. Let me just read some things that are coming in. And then I wanted to ask the three guests we have here about how they might be thinking about reinventing Eslin, if Eslin even needs to be reinvented, I mean, particularly with all the successes and triumphs it had. Although there is a question I want to go to right away here, and before I even read any of your comments, this is from Gerald on our website, who says, not to be a wet blanket, but failures can often be as interesting and as indicative as successes. Which ideas of Eslin's completely failed to thrive?
Well, I remember in 1963, we'd been going for a year, and I went to something called a tea group up in Highlands. You know, it's morphed into encounter groups, and in the enthusiasm of those years, proclaimed this as the coming yoga. Well, some of the encounter groups at Eslin, none of us would touch with a 10-foot pole now, where it was the high art of shouting insults at one another in the hope that one of them would awaken you. And there are people still in Mill Valley who remember those insults from half a century ago. I mean, there's
many of them coming from Fritz Perls.
Well, and we've been experimental along the way. There was I could go on and on about this. Something called psychic karate once that when we after one meeting in which the shrieks from the meeting rooms were so horrific that it was terrifying people, we never invited the leader back, and people called us gutless that we couldn't proceed with these. And we said, well, it's just that the shrieking is just ruining everybody's meal, destroying everybody else's fun. And so there's been a lot of learning along the way about the very clumsy ways of growth and ineffective ways of growth. It's been a definite learning place. And so we've been confessing our mistakes and even our sins in public now for about 40 years at least.
Well, you just have. And Gordon wanted to add something. Gordon Wheeler?
Yeah. You know, Eslin has always stood, and Mike has been emphasizing this, for the inseparability of the personal and the social. Your personal healing reaches into service. Your service needs to be supported by personal growth. But we did something that was premature. It was a great idea, but we did not have the organizational sophistication to support it. And that was the project at Limekiln, buying another property near the Eslin campus specifically for youth programs that were to be much more subsidized. Always a dilemma for us. How do we reach underserved and young people? We do reach thousands of young people each year, but we want to do even more. And that project ended up failing, and we had to spin that off. That was before my time, but it was a great idea, and its time has come again. And I hope we can push more and more in that direction with our new leadership for youth programs.
Well, there's also been a new office open in Carmel, which has also again caused some criticism, some strong criticism.
Actually, I think that's been a great benefit and value to Eslin. We have probably about a dozen people who work now in the Carmel Center, and they'll spend a day or two every week on our main property in Big Sur. But it allows us to lighten our footprint on the land, which is a huge concern of ours, as well as it makes it so much easier for us to hire and retain professional staff.
I guess some of the concern comes out of the fact that, you know, you go to Eslin and you don't have to worry about cell phones. There are a couple computers there, but not a lot. And thinking, Carmel, corporate office, internet all over the place, you know, wired and all that sort of thing. I mean, that seems to be the gist of a lot of the criticism that I've read. But let me read some comments here. John Felsteiner, who is professor emeritus at Stanford and a friend of mine, writes, in February 1966, knowing little about California and nothing about Eslin, my new wife and I took our honeymoon there. On our first morning, we took a dim light morning outdoors naked stone bath over the Pacific. A few minutes later, to our youthful surprise, a handsome fellow walked right past us. No big problem. Then going in for breakfast, we found our long table somehow spread with pills. No problem. Just an exciting entrance to Northern California. I just want to give, you know, sort of some of these, we asked people for their memories. Tyler comments online. I was introduced to Esalen at the age of 15 when my mother gave me a set of lectures of Alan Watts recorded there many years before. I didn't understand but was fascinated. In college, I discovered Joseph Campbell, yoga, meditation, and Eastern thought. The name Esalen came up now and again. It took 25 years, and in 2009, I was driving up PCH in Big Sur, saw the sign, and a voice said, "It's time to visit." Since then, I have attended a dozen or so workshops. Each visit is a respite, a chance to network with intelligent and thoughtful leaders, and a big step in my personal development. The most recent visit was Thanksgiving week. My greatest gratitude goes to the founders, staff, and teachers that started and continue so many revolutions and evolutions of thought in that very special spot perched on Big Sur's wild coast. And Leslie writes, I moved from New York City at 27, and within a day, one of the authors I work with, Terrence McKenna, a scholar in residence at Esalen, talked me into driving to visit. I will never forget how afraid I was to drive Highway 1. And then, of course, the realization that I would get naked in front of someone I work with at the hot tubs. As we stripped down, Terrence looked me in the eyes and said, the trick is not to look at anyone below the shoulders. After I got in the tubs, all I could think of is the business should be this great. I went on to have many wonderful visits. So lots of those kind of testaments, and let's go to your calls, and we begin with Paul. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Well, I just phoned to make a comment. I did not go on the air. I just wanted to share that I discovered Esalen about 2 years ago doing a massage program, the 28-day, and I was going through a really hard time then because we were discussing divorce. My marriage had been falling apart for a couple of years. You know, we were just getting worse and worse. And when I got back from Esalen, it all changed, you know. I had the tools to work on it. I knew, you know, what was wrong. I'd pinpointed it. It was an issue of being present with each other in our relationship. And ever since, it's been getting better and better.
Wow. I'm sure that's music to the ears of our guests. And let me thank
sure
you for
is.
The call.
So love to hear that.
Well, maybe here's one you don't like to hear. I just wonder what your response is to this. This is from a listener. Ask them why Dick Price's co-founder family was not invited to the 50th anniversary recently, which I attended. I've been going to Esalen for 40 years. Do we know the answer to that? Anybody?
Dick Price's family? I mean, his son we're very close to.
His son lives in Poland, right. Were they not invited? I mean, is that even factually correct, or was there a reason?
No, Chris
was certainly invited.
Yeah, they were absolutely invited. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. Debbie writes, the legendary Esalen Institute was among the treasures that drew us to Northern California almost 30 years ago. And let me bring another caller in, and that's you, Greg. Hi.
Hello?
Greg, you're on the air. Yeah.
Oh, great, thanks. Hey, I just wanted to, you know, say back in college, I'm from the Bay Area. We used to come down to Esalen and be able to go visit the hot springs there, you know, from like midnight to 4 a.m. in the morning. I had some amazing transformative experiences there. And I'm wondering if your guest speakers could talk about, you know, the role that those hot springs play beyond the physical one in the Esalen experience and whether or not they still open them up to the public during those hours.
Yes, we absolutely do have night bathing. I think it's at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to call. You have to call and get on the list. We're full every night. I don't know. I can't remember when that we haven't turned people away to come for night bathing.
And I say it's quite an experience to sit underneath that canopy of stars and mm-hmm. to look.
Yeah, people do drive a distance to be there from mm-hmm. 1 till what, 4, 1 to 5. Mm-hmm. But during the rest of the time, it's for mm-hmm. people who are there for the seminars or personal retreats.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think you were reading it, Michael, just earlier, but it is very, very common for that kind of experience where people may be a little nervous about the nudity at the tubs. I mean, we have all these a month ago we had the Complexity Economics Conference, and so we had, I don't know, 15 or 20 economists that were there. And
they call it the dismal science. Were they there in their bathing suits?
No, they were not. And it's actually a really, it's an experience that, how can I say it? It really helps people communicate more. You get really comfortable. It's not about nudity. You know, it's about equality. It's about we're all human beings. And that's what you feel like when you're down there. And it impacts everybody, whether you're an economist or...
Well, and Michael, too, you don't have to go to the baths. It's not required. And you can go at night. You can wear a bathing suit. Exactly. You can a towel. And, you know, people, there's a vast natural modesty, you know. And in other cultures, whether it's Japan or Sweden or Russia, we used to go to Russia. I mean, people are so at ease going to these hot baths. But in America, it's a big – it's been a big item. I mean, and it comes out of our American culture.
Our Puritanism. But I was just thinking there's a wonderful poem by Gary Snyder, who you know was very influenced by Japanese culture, called The Bath. And it captures that sense of being a family together and the communal sense of the bath. It's really quite beautiful.
But it's not required, and there's a natural modesty down there all the time.
And to your larger point, Greg, there is a spiritual dimension to it. Many people report that. Sometimes you can have, you know, a kind of a party atmosphere in one tub, but there's also a silent side, and there are people who really are finding that it supports communing with everything that you want to commune with and through other people.
Well, I don't know if this dovetails, but I'm looking at an email here that says, would a Christian feel comfortable at Esalen?
Many do.
Yes.
Well, you know, for years, Michael, we had a project with the National Council of Churches. Theologians would come and be in the programs and then reflect theologically on what was going on. We've had also groups of nuns and
Brother David lived there, a Catholic monk for a
year.
Couple of years, and he still comes back and teaches.
We have wonderful relationships and visits from the Kamaldoli Monastery right down the road. And also, of course, as you know, Michael, a few years back when Esalen, at a very tense moment in American-Iranian relations back in 06, we hosted the visit of together with the National Cathedral in Washington of the liberal former president Khatami of Iran, the pro-Western democratic president.
And now we have a project, you know, of Christians, Jews, and Muslims, you know, meeting our Abrahamic family.
Yeah, I mentioned it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have John on the air next from Santa Monica. John, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I've been coming to Esalen for probably 25 years and love it. It's been a home away from home for me and a place of renewal ongoingly, and it's literally changed my life like many, many other people. I'm one of the people in the extended worldwide Esalen community who's been aware of the problems that have happened over the past number of months with the sudden termination of some longtime employees, and it's created a ripple effect sort of around the world with people who love Esalen. And where I want to go, what I'm curious about is, what has come out of this? I know there's been an ongoing attempt to sort of hash out some of the issues and conflicts, but what I want to be reassured of is that senior management, that the board, that people have gotten, that there's a deep concern here, because many of us see the staff as more than just people who work there, of course, but an integral and essential part of the Esalen experience. And I want to know if there are any changes or things that you've moved forward with or are planning to make sure that we don't go through this again. And that we move toward the future in a way that is consistent with the goals of the humanistic goals of what we hold Esalen to be.
Trisha McEnany.
We're absolutely committed to our residential community, and we're a living, learning community, and I think that brings with it, you know, immense joys. It makes it a place like, you know, no like any other place. And it's also makes it very challenging as we go through our own evolution.
I mean, this is what we call trial and error. I mean, it's learning by experience and all that, which is a lot of what Esalen stands for, actually.
And it is. And this that we all know, I mean, I certainly know personally, but transformation is messy. It's hard. We are committed to the mission of Esalen and to having Esalen thrive and survive into the future. And that means we have to make some changes in the organization. And we grapple with those. They're hard.
Can you give us a little quick summary of what that mission is as you see it?
Well, you know, our mission has been, always will be, currently is about social and personal transformation. It's about this unlocking these amazing, extraordinary human capacities that we have.
which we don't use.
Potential capacity.
Yeah, all those neurons that just are sitting there idly can be activated and maybe electrified.
Yeah,
well, look who we have on the air here. Ken Dykwall calling in. Hi, Ken.
Hello, Michael, Gordon, Tricia, and Michael. I guess I'm just calling to say that as someone who discovered Esalen at the ripe young age of 20, and now that I'm 62, this is my 43rd year of friendship and relationship with Esalen, I just want to say a big thank you to you guys. In a world that's increasingly tumultuous and stressful for so many folks, and online all the time, the idea that just down that magical highway there's this spectacular sanctuary that's off the grid, and people are attempting to be kind and mindful, and the gardens are growing it and putting it right on your plate. And over my decades of friendship with Esalen, I've just seen so much innovation come boiling up out of the place. And it could be grand scale, you know, the emergence of a new politic, or personal. So many folks come to Esalen who might be in a transition. They're thinking of a new book, or they're just lost a loved one, and they need a place to pause that's safe and take a deep breath and see those stars and watch the waterfalls. And I just think what you guys have done by midwifing and shepherding and holding your hand on the rudder is absolutely unbelievable. So I want to tell you how much I appreciate who you are and what you've done.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Ken.
As always.
We appreciate you, Ken. You're a treasure not just for Esalen but for the culture with your pioneering of gerontology and age wave. Thank you.
Read a few more comments that have been coming in. Arian says, I'm so happy to hear this discussion on Esalen. It's the one place in the world that I most want to love, but unfortunately have been severely turned off by the pretentious hippie chaos that has greeted me each time I've attempted to visit. I've tried to book personal retreats and even courses and have been passed around to up four different people on the phone, all seemingly totally clueless as to what was going on. I've even driven all the way down there twice and was turned around at the gates by people with major holier-than-thou attitudes. I'd love more than anything to see with my own eyes the beauty that I hear is Esalen, but at this point, I just don't have the stomach to deal with BS surroundings just getting inside. Now, since we heard a lot of laudatory remarks, I wanted to get some of these on the record, and a lot of them have to do with not necessarily that kind of experience, but more this. Russ writes, don't get me wrong, I love Esalen and love you guys. I know it's expensive to run the place. However, to say there's no class discrimination strikes me as disingenuous. The cost itself is a harsh class discriminator. Discrimination is built into the price. Keep doing what you're doing. It's wonderful, but please don't kid yourself that you're something that you're not.
Okay, but look, we give scholarships. You know, we pay such salaries as we do, way, way below, you know, comparable places. We're out there now trying to raise money. You know, to keep that place going down there is expensive. So if somebody, you know, says that's discrimination, give us some money so we can give scholarships. And we're here, and people do donate money for scholarships, and we're right here for you.
And we do spend nearly a couple of million dollars a year on pro bono research, scholarship, internship, personal process for the staff on all those pro bono activities, including our subsidized preschool. And even with that, if you come there for a workshop for 5 days and you stay in a sleeping bag, which is very comfortable, and a mat, you know, in a meeting room, bathroom and everything there, you're paying just barely over $100 a day for your course, your accommodations, all those wonderful meals with the farm-to-garden food, your 30 open classes a week, and your own class and the baths. I mean, it's I don't know where you'd beat that. People come and say, you know, I could take this CEU course at a Holiday Inn. It would cost me more over there with the meals that I'm paying here.
Well, they say it's a sign of success when you get a lot of the praise and kudos along with the brickbats or criticism. And, you know, this is certainly a testament to that. In fact, I was reading some of those comments of the group that calls itself the Nine, those who are have been very critical. It has extraterrestrial roots, by the way, have been very critical of Esalen. And they were talking about maybe we should occupy Esalen. And then here's Frank, who comments online, I'd like to propose the Occupy Wall Street movement is the Esalen of today. It's the means for people to rethink the modus operandi of modern society and question every assumption. It is more relevant. The far out has to take a back seat to the urgent. Which brings up, well, let me actually get another caller on here, but I want to get to this question of maybe reinvention of Esalen or sustainability of Esalen and where you think you're going or where you ought to go, particularly since a lot ain't broken, so doesn't necessarily need to be fixed. But let's bring Evan on. Evan, you're on.
Hey, Mike and Gordon, this is Evan Anderson with the National Cathedral. How are you guys?
Oh, hello, Evan.
Hello, Evan.
Listen, I'm calling in because I just want to really call attention to Esalen's Track 2 diplomacy work. I feel like you just kind of glossed over, you know, your wonderful support of our work with Iran. And it's because of your support that the whole U.S.-Iran initiative was created at the National Cathedral in the first place and really, really opened the door on a lot of relationship building between clerics in Iran and the United States and work that continues today kind of behind the scenes. But, you know, most people may not know the term Track 2 diplomacy was coined at Esalen through our colleague Joe Montville. And I just want to, you know, call attention to and thank you guys for the work that you've done in this area with Russia, with Iran, and a lot of other work that people just don't know about. So keep up the good work, and thank you again, because you planted the seeds for a phenomenal, phenomenal program.
And thank you
thank
for the
you,
call.
Evan.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. Listener writes, while attending a program by Starhawk, I had the most astounding massage of my life. Several of us from our area went to discover the goddess within us and had a marvelous time. I did decide not to dance in the moonlight naked because it was so cold. The rest, including all the delicious vegetarian organic food, was a highlight of my life. And Carol writes, loving this program. Grew up in Santa Cruz Mountains in the 50s and 60s and consider Esalen a steady measure of my own history. Used to drive down to the baths after 1 a.m. to go into the baths. I thoroughly enjoyed reading Kreipal's, that is Jeff Kreipal, who is a Rice theology professor who has been on forum and wrote a book about Esalen. Religion of No Religion is the name of his book. And she says, and I'm wondering if your panel can comment on that account of Esalen or any of the many others. Are there books they recommend or that they contest? Thank you so much. Looking forward to going back now, stirred by this dialogue. Thank you so much, Carol. Well, there's been a lot of work on Esalen in print, Mike. What do you like? What do you not like?
Well, Jeff Kreipal's book is the fullest account by far. Walt Anderson wrote a book called Upstart Spring, but it ends around 82 or 83. Kreipal's book is, if you want to start, Esalen, the Religion of No Religion by Jeff Kreipal. That would be the short way home to find out, you know, the most about what we've been up to.
And a listener named Steve. Again, we get the positive and the negative. He says, ask Gordon and Tricia to explain their humane practice of structuring work schedules to limit hours worked by certain classes of employees for the sole purpose of denying them health benefits and why they had to be forced by staff in a now incomplete compliance with minimum wage laws. Tricia says that she spent the last 5 or 6 years building a credible business structure. How long does it take to comply with basic labor laws?
Well, I think I'm not sure what they're talking about, where we don't limit hours of people to because of health insurance reasons. I think it's probably we don't offer part-time people health insurance. We pay probably $600,000 a year, more than $600,000 a year for our health insurance that we offer to our employees, and we pay 100% of the premium for our employees, which is unheard of.
It's also today. Not uncommon to have part-time employees simply, unfortunately, not having health insurance coverage. It's all too common, alas. Here's Shauna writes, while I'm a very big fan of the expanded humanistic approach of Esalen, there does not seem to be much of an effort to diversify the participants. There seems to be a racial and class hegemony in the place. Are these issues addressed in any fashion? Mike Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, this is a constant for us. Tried in all sorts of ways, Michael Firms, going back into the 60s to open things up. George Leonard and Price Cobbs started a program that went on for several years, black-white encounter groups, that did have, I think, another one of our ripple effects. People like Andy Young came to those, and pretty soon there were sheriff's departments and other groups, using that format of black-white encounter, which later really did kind of morph into our Russian project, getting folks together who are not used to being together and see the miracles that happen, breaking out stereotypes, you know, KGB guys and CIA guys together down at Esalen. But anyway, no, this has been up for us. We were very conscious of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to just jump in. And it's like one of, we have three major initiatives going forward, and one of them is exactly that, to diversify and broaden our audience and focus on particularly the new generation of leaders. And we have this Esalen Integral Leadership Program where we're working and partnering with universities to get university students credit for taking our courses, particularly our 28-day Work Scholar Month. And that's really exciting. We're doing a presentation at Stanford in April. And then we're working a lot through partnerships and collaborations. It's a great way that we can diversify and reach different audience that, like, I don't think was available in the 60s and 70s because there weren't so many organizations that are doing this work.
Well, we've got very little time left here, unfortunately, about a minute. And I wanted to find out from you, Michael Murphy, just – you've been the co-visionary here from the beginning. What do you foresee up ahead? Like I said, does Esalen need to reinvent itself in some ways? In what ways? Or just stick with what's been successful?
Well, you know, we're constantly looking to innovate, both in our public programming and in our initiatives, what we call our Center for Theory and Research. These are these invitational conferences, research initiatives that we're always generating. So we want to continue to innovate there. But in terms of some massive restructuring that people come up with, we're not going to do it. There are too many people's lives we've touched in too many ways in the public programming to change the basic structure. We're not going to. And we've got this wonderful format where people can gather and continue, develop fellowships that last up to 30 years now. Some of these fellowships working on, for example, the track to work, and in other fields, we want to persevere, but innovate within that basic structure.
Let me once again congratulate all of you. 50-year anniversary, a definite milestone. Congratulations. Mike Murphy, co-founder and chairman emeritus of the board of the Esalen Institute, Gordon Wheeler, president, and Tricia McEntee, CEO. Thank you for being with us on Forum.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.